That's it. No more interruptions. That's it. I said no coffee.
No, one for me, Hal. One for me.
Oh, which is it?
There you go.
That's it.
Feeny.
Now, it is, the company is, consists of 14 people, and that's it. There's no chorus, no singing chorus, no dancing chorus, just 14 people, among whom we have Dean Jones, Elaine Stritch, Barbara Barry, a fellow named George Coe, about five girls, all in there between, you know, early 20s and 30s, and a few fellas. And that is the company. Essentially, the style of the show is as follows. There is a set, could be called a single set. There are a lot of changes you ring on it, but it's a structure. And it's New York. The show is about marriage, and the show is about New York City. Or better still, perhaps, about any big modern city, which is tough to be married in, and tough not to be married in, and tough to live in, and you know, all the rest of it. The essence of the show is that you are with a fellow on his 38th birthday who is still a bachelor. A bunch of his friends are giving a surprise birthday party for him. And he arrives, they present a big birthday cake, and it's rather Pinterest, the opening. It's strange and weird, and the structure that Boris has designed is all steel. And to give you a notion of what it looks like with just a front projection on it, it's important that you see just how modern, different, crazy, or whatever it is. But that's the structure. On the other hand, if possible, very important for the whole play, to have all of the couples splinter and go to their own homes and have their own private lives and to lose the structure and just retain a series of different homes. Now, he comes to his birthday party. He tries to blow out the candles, make a wish and blow out the candles. He doesn't blow them out, all of them. Some of the wives help. You immediately get the whole position of the single man and the married wives who use him. He's a catalyst. He's the one that takes care of the wife when the husband has something else to do. He's the one who talks to the wife on the telephone because husbands don't like to talk to wives on telephone, and so on. So it's very much an examination of marriage. And it's very much an examination of one fellow who can't get married. Somehow or other, just hasn't made it. And it's also an examination of single girls who are qualified but unacceptable to him. Let's see. What else do I want to say? Yes, one more major thing. Everybody is on stage all night. That is a fact. It's not just what Lively said. They all have their homes on stage, their rooms. Their rooms are not the same room all night. It can be anywhere. They're like you saw them there in a series of rooms, but they move around and they're in other rooms of their apartments and houses. But they're always there and they're always living their lives because the show is also about how married couples have a fix on a third person, but in fact, they're independent of it. That's the thing the poor bastard doesn't know. So that they have their lives, and they do their everyday, ordinary bits of relating and being together, separate from him. And those things they will do all night. The mundane, ordinary, everyday things of just living together. And whenever that happens, he's alone. Now, there are about 8 or 9 songs we're going to play for you. There are a couple of things...
Good afternoon. You're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM and www.resonancefm.com on the net. Today's show is part 2 presented by a DJ hybridist, otherwise known as Sandra Cross, on the topic or subject theme of Stephen Sondheim. Good afternoon, Sandra.
Oh, good afternoon, William. Thanks for having me again.
That's okay. Today's programme, I think we're going to focus on Company, aren't we?
Yeah, but we're focusing on Company, which is a play from 1970. What we were hearing in the background there is something that I discovered through my crawlings, as I call them, rather than trawlings. It's actually titled Company, the Music Backers Tape, and it dates back to way back to 1969 when Hal Prince, we can hear Hal Prince there, who is Sondheim's longtime collaborator, theatre director and producer, talking to, we don't know who they are, I don't know who they are at least, these people who are called the Music Backers. So this is presumably what he's been having to do repeatedly through the years. On his and Sondheim's behalf to get the money men to stump up. So it's a very long, it's an absolute masterclass. I think it's beautiful. There's nothing as great as hearing it from the horse's mouth. And here we've got the horse and the mouth. We've got two incredible practitioners, really. So he's doing his directing pitch, Prince, but it seems to me to be free of that sort of that monstrous side of, you know, what it might take to get money for things, you know. It's just very calm, very collected, very matter of fact. This is the play, this is what it's about.
So are they preparing a pitch for the money men, to the backers?
I don't know if they're preparing it. I assumed that they were actually delivering it to people who are called the money men. The money men and or women.
Right.
I mean, actually, just on the subject of money, I discovered that, in fact, Stephen Sondheim's father bought a percentage in West Side Story in order to help him out. Not a great percentage, but nevertheless, it was something like $15,000, which in the 50s was probably quite a bit.
Yeah.
So obviously, the money comes from hither and thither.
Right.
But the you know, if you're wanting to mount something like this, which went on to Broadway in 1970, then, and it's got a cast of, you know, about 15 to 18 people in it, it's going to take a long time to produce it, to get it right, to get the sets right, to get the singers, the songs, all the rest of it. So that's what we're hearing there. And ultimately what we also hear is Steve, as he calls him, friendly style, comes in and starts doing the songs, singing his own songs. And once again, for me, there's nothing quite like that coming from the maker of the music and the lyrics, because it's only him that really knows what they should really sound like. So in some senses, when Sondheim is singing and and accompanying himself, there's nothing finer for me, really, than it's like seeing manuscripts, you know, the work of the author is just really, I think, quite staggeringly good, really, even although he's not a trained singer and apparently has a very lazy left hand for piano, very good strong right hand, but that affects the ways in which he composes sometimes away from the piano, so he's not affected by that.
Right.
Bobby, we've been trying to call you. Angel, I've got something to tell you. Bobby, we've been trying to reach you all day. Kids were asking Bobby, there was something I wanted to say. Your line was busy, Bobby. How have you been? Stop by on your way home, Bobby. We've been thinking of you. Drop by anytime, Bobby. There's a concert on Tuesday. How about some travel on Sunday? Bob, we're having Saturday night. Thursday time we got together, it's Wednesday, all right, and everybody together, doorbells and phones ringing. Bobby, come on over for dinner, we'll be so glad to see you. Bobby, come on over for dinner, just be the three of us, only the three of us. Thank you. I shouldn't say this, but Bobby, we've been worried. You sure you're all right? Drop by anytime, Bobby. Come on over for dinner. We'll be so glad to see you. Bobby, come on over for dinner. Just be the three of us, only the three of us.
Okay, so that's basically Sondheim singing and playing as a. This is from 1969 on something
that's
called
right.
The Musical Backers Tape.
Yeah.
So and him, he and Hal Prince are making a pitch to try and get this production staged, I suppose, because it's just before 1970 when it was first staged.
Yeah. So yes, as we heard, the sounds terribly loud.
No, you're okay.
Okay.
That's all right.
As I said, we heard Sondheim there doing the first of several pitches. They, in fact, do the entire production. He does all 15
really?
Of the songs.
Oh, right.
Which, obviously, we won't be able to cover here. So there he was in all his glory, I think.
Yeah.
There's something slightly... sad about the voice and the singing, you know, when you've heard what happens to it next, and when you've got your next series of collaborators who take it to the next level, you know, all of this, that's one of the beauties of musical, of anything that's live. Obviously you're dependent so much upon a whole series of collaborators.
Yeah, well, this has a very raw quality,
which you probably quite like.
I do love that
about it, and also because it is coming from literally from the horse's mouth.
Yeah.
With all that he feels about it, which each new person that sings that song will feel something different. So they will inflect it with something completely different.
Yeah. So perhaps we should mention. I mean, last week we finished, didn't we, with Oscar Hammerstein?
Yeah.
Who was Sondheim's mentor?
Yeah.
For quite a while, and then we mentioned actually after the program.
Yeah.
Whenever, not last week, the week before last.
Yeah.
We then went to Southwark Cathedral and found the Harvard Chapel, which is off to one side of the cathedral, where there is a plaque to the memory of Oscar Hammerstein.
That's right,
We haven't quite figured out yet why he is particularly commemorated there.
No.
But someone in there said that they still call two members of the choir the Hammersteiners.
Yes, that's, we should have found out more, though.
Yeah, we could try.
it started something here.
Which is quite extraordinary. And then, of course, round the corner on Southwark Street, The Assassins is playing.
That's right, yes.
Which is a Sondheim production from, I'm not sure when, the 90s?
The 90s, the early 90s.
Yeah, totally sold out at the moment, but apparently you can get an interview queue up.
Uh-huh.
All right. So, but this week we're going to focus mostly on company.
Well, yeah, I thought, you know, the various ways of doing all of these sort of appreciations and so on. But in a way, you in order to do any justice to the author, really, you need to sort of confine your area of interest. I do happen to like company itself. And I think it probably is the first of Sondheim that I ever encountered. So probably why one of the reasons why I like it so much anyway. And also the one of the problems about doing more, sort of just extrapolating the songs from the theatrical production, doesn't really tell you too much about what's actually happening. I mean, as it goes, we're going to be quite hard pushed to get through the whole soundtrack, even for this one production.
How many songs are there in it?
There are 15 songs.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So where do you want to go from here?
Well, what we're going to hear next is the track one, is Company.
Yeah.
As Stephen Sondheim was just singing that for the music backers. So we'll now hear what it sounds like when it's actually the Broadway production. And there's just a little sort of sidebar on this. In the crawlings that I was doing, I discovered that Penny Baker had actually made a film of the recording of the original soundtrack. And this is an absolutely fascinating document, which apparently appeared at the New York Film Festival in 1970. And as you know better than me, being the film person, Penny Baker is noted, famed for a lot of the documentary he's made, documentaries that he's made, especially with Bob Dylan and Monterey Pop. Apparently, he did something on Plastic Ono Band.
Oh, really?
He did
really?
Town Bloody Hall, which I'd forgotten about, which is that fantastic film with Norman Mailer and Germaine Greer and others, and Susan Sontag in the audience, interjecting and being very polite to Norman Mailer, actually. But they are they're fascinating. Documentaries, I think he is.
So, what is it? What did he do? He made a documentary of the making, or is it actually a film of Company?
It's a film of the recording of the soundtrack, so it's not the theatre piece. It isn't a film of the.
So that would show the actual singers, not the actors.
Well, they're one and the same.
They're one and the same at that time.
Well, in this case, they are one and the same. That's why it's just such a great starting point.
Right.
Because it is the original. It's the original cast.
Yeah. Okay.
And there we are.
So do you want to, shall we play this? Is this the same as the track we've just heard? But this is the...
Yeah, this is the same one,
The actual finish.
This is,
comes Company. no strings, good times, room hums, company. Late nights, quick bites, party games, deep talks, long walks, telephone calls. Thoughts shared, souls bared, private names, all those photos up on the walls. With love, with love, filling the days. With love, 70 ways, kabobby with love from all those good and crazy people, my friends. Those good and crazy people, my married friends. And that's what it's all about, isn't it? That's what it's really about. Really about.
Bobby, Bobby, baby.
Bobby, Bobby.
Bobby, Robert, darling.
Bobby.
Bobby,
it's Sarah.
Bobby, listen, pal, I'd like your opinion.
Try me, Peter.
Bobby,
Bobby,
I need your advice.
Can I call you back tomorrow?
Bobby, if you visit the kids once or twice.
Ginny, I could take them to the
zoo. Bobby, 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 Bobby,
where have you been? You been?
Is your heart beating? Were you dancing?
Yeah. So that's from, when does this...
1970. This is the original Broadway recording with the original cast.
Okay.
And obviously, you know, to modern ears, it sounds so antiquated. You know, all of the instrumentation, the hysteria of the voices and everything. But, of course, that's what I love. I just love that outpouring. Yeah. It's just, you know, really, really going for it.
Mm. Did he direct it as well?
No, Hal Prince is the director.
Oh, Hal Prince is the director.
Yeah.
Okay.
But right. We should say something about the... Sondheim always works from an existing narrative. So in this case, he always works from a book. This is a book by George Firth, which was a series of one-act plays, and it was deemed to be really very difficult to stage. So Hal Prince must be something of a prince amongst men to actually have got the backers to back this.
A little bit. Apparently, it's presented like it's a sort of series of vignettes which are not in any particular chronological order.
No. The other thing that Sondheim says about it is it's almost, you can almost see it as being the central figure is called, well, he's variously called Robbie or Bobbo or Robert, you can almost see it as a sort of just a dream sequence on his part, you know, on the psychiatrist's couch almost. It's sort of fragmented and, you know, sort of collaged together.
Is it a self-portrait or...?
Well, as I was just looking at the lyrics for the chorus, the final chorus on that song, which just seems to go on forever, he's saying, company, company, lots of company, years of company, love is company, company. And you think, you see the only child in that, really, you know, because that's what you always, as an only child, you just long for there to be some company. So to some extent, also, he has also said, going back to Hammerstein and Rodgers wrote a play called Allegro, which was quite far into their career they wrote this play, but it was really unsuccessful on every possible level. They thought so too, and they could never work out why. Somebody, I think it was Karen McIntosh, you know, who's a major sort of producer director for people like what's that English person, you know, who writes all the musicals in England?
Not Lloyd Webber.
Yeah.
Okay.
But don't hold this against Karen McIntosh.
I didn't think it would
actually
be him.
Actually said to, apparently said to Sondheim that he felt that Sondheim's desire to write company was also his desire to fix something within Allegro.
Oh,
really? So you have, as you say, you know, is it autobiographical? I think in many, many ways it is autobiographical because he was just absolutely he so loved Hammerstein, he never stopped thanking him as his mentor for saving him, actually.
Right.
Literally saving him from what sort of other life he might have had.
Was it a success, the play, at the time?
Company,
yeah.
Well, yes, it seems it was.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, West Side Story was the thing that probably launched him, was it?
Well, I suppose that made it very possible for him to get his foot indoors and so on.
Yeah.
But he was doing other work, apparently, at the same time. You know, he was having to supplement his income by doing TV shows and all sorts of stuff. He was not averse to just schlepping his stuff around, knowing that he was, you know, working on his craft. He's not, you know, didn't feel he was entitled or... Yeah. Anything,
but he there is a sort of an experimental side to his work. But would you agree that he actually wants to produce a popular hit? He's trying to reach a big audience, isn't he?
I think he wants to communicate. That's what he wants to do, and and he wants to do it big time.
Right. Okay.
But yes, there is the thing that obviously sets him apart for me anyway is the fact that it is slightly crazy in places. I mean, the lyrics are just. Quite crazy very often. Everything is over the top. In the music for this, you also hear all of his references to almost all music theatre that went before him. You know, he's like a painter. He's quoting, you know, earlier incarnations of musical theatre, and he carries on doing that throughout his career.
Right.
You know, in the way that Woody Allen might, you know, do, you know, sort of, what was that film that he made that was about radio in the 30s or something?
Oh,
people
right.
end up sort of revisiting their childhood. Really,
right.
I suppose, and then,
but
also wanting to applaud the fact and settle yourself within a particular sphere.
Yeah. All right, what do you want to do? Should we play another track? Where do we go from here?
Have we still got the music backers on? Are they still chattering?
That's still.
Away?
Let's see.
Should we?
There they are.
Okay.
They're still pitching.
Let's hear a bit of that then.
A person that titillates a person and then leaves her flat is crazy. He's a troubled person. He's a really crazy person himself. When a person's personality is personable, he shouldn't know how to sit like a lump. It's harder than a matador coercible to try to get you off of your rump. So single and attentive and attractive a man is everything a person could wish. But turning off a person is the act of a man who likes to pull the hooks out of fish. Knock, knock, is anybody there? Knock, knock, it really isn't there. Knock, knock, what can a person do? Knock, knock, you're only passing through. Knock, knock, the tiniest response. Knock, knock, is all a person wants. Knock, knock,
So this is still Sondheim singing, does he? Presumably he sings the whole production then.
Well, he does, yes. They both, Hal Prince describes every single scene, every single actor, every single action, every single song, and then Sondheim comes in and gives it his all. This is a song called You Could Drive a Person Crazy, which is quite a difficult song to sing, and it's for three singers, all of whom are female. The characters' names are Kathy, Maria and April. So they're, you know, basically this is about marriage and everybody's take on what marriage is all about, you know. Bobby isn't married, they're trying, all of his married friends are trying to convince him that it's a great state of affairs, but you know, he's not convinced, and they're not convinced either, you know, because they're actually you know, they I don't know if they're singing this to Bobby or if they're singing it to their spouses or men in general. You know, you could drive a person crazy. I think Hal Prince goes on to say that this is their reference back to the Andrews sisters, who I think were kind of popular in the 40s. They were three-part harmony, the Andrews sisters. So once again, you know, they're paying their dues, they're saying, you know, this is where this comes from, and integrating it into the show, so it becomes this sort of melange, really, of the history of musical theatre.
We saw something, was it Maria Friedman?
Well, she's a great Sondheim exponent. She's English. Well, she has a German background, but she lives and works in England, and she's an absolute massive Sondheim exponent.
Yeah, and there's a story about that, isn't there, where she didn't get the part because someone else dropped out, or
that's
a digression that we don't need at the moment.
Yes,
not necessarily. But when we saw her, there was a very interesting bit where she describes how there's one song in particular where she has to sing it at rapid pace.
I can't remember, because the performance that we saw at the Festival Hall, which was what I call one of those mashups where they do a whole series of songs from a series of different plays, so you're not just looking at one play or production, but you are getting, you know, great singers doing the songs and loving Sondheim. There are always I don't know what the ratio would be, but there are a lot of songs which singers say are just so complicated to sing, because the rate, the pace, the number of words contained within any one line, and the nature of those words too, make it very testing and challenging. But that's the thing about Sondheim too, he challenges himself, and then the next person, the collaborator, the singing, the vocalist, is then challenged into it.
But where we saw her perform something, and basically she said at the beginning, this song is incredibly difficult to remember and to perform.
And in fact, she did. We'll remove the expletive, but she actually got into she got into the song, and she just said, "F it." I'm going to have to start again. And everybody just clapped, because it was just so ballsy, frankly, to do that at the festival hall, to just say, I knew I was going to mess it up, and here it is, and you've seen me. But it was very generous, and it's a very generous thing of her to do. To do that. I mean, a lot of people might have just carried on and hoped that we wouldn't notice.
All right. Should we play another track, or
where are we with the music backers?
The music backers?
Some water won't melt in her mouth. From the last
I think that might be not a favourite. Should we lower that now? And
We can lower that for a bit.
So there are 15 tracks at least on this, which we're not...
At this rate, we're going to get through about three.
I know. Actually, we're doing now what I hadn't wanted to do. I wanted to be much more rigorous about it, but it's not possible. Because one of the things about just extrapolating the songs from the whole business of the performance itself is that's what you're doing, and then you're left with less, obviously, because when you see the performance, you've got them doing everything. They're singing, they're dancing, and you're wondering, how on earth can these people do this? And it's a real gift. Sondheim calls the audience the sort of final collaborator. You are, and that's what I love about theatre when it's working anyway. When it's not working, it's not so good. But when it's working, you do feel that you are, there is something happening between the performers and you.
Does he write songs for particular performers, the way that Hammerstein did.
He does, and we'll get to one of those in this. We'll get to one of those in this with Elaine Stritch, who is another great Broadway icon, and he wrote this especially for her. And we can talk about that because, you know, there's sort of anecdote attached to that particular song. So what I was saying was we're now detaching all of the songs really from the narrative such as it is.
Yes.
But suffice it to say that I think maybe the next one we should play is number 6 on your...
What is this?
Which is Dean Jones, who is the principal, playing Bobby.
Yeah.
He's singing a song called Someone Is Waiting.
Someone is waiting, cool as Sarah, easy and loving as Susan, Jenny. Someone is waiting, warm as Susan, frantic and touching as Amy. Joanne, would I know her even if I met her? Have I missed her? Did I let her go? A Susan sort of Sarah, a Jenny-ish Joanne. Wait for me, I'm ready now. I'll find you if I can. Someone will hold me, soft as Jenny, skinny and blue-eyed as Amy. Susan. Someone will wake me, sweet as Amy, tender and foolish as Sarah. Joanne, did I know her? Have I waited too long? Maybe so, but maybe so has she. My blue-eyed Sarah, warm Joanne, sweet Jenny, loving Susan, crazy Amy. Wait for me, I'll hurry. Wait for me, hurry, wait for me, hurry, wait for me.
Well, it sounds like Bobby's trying to construct his ideal woman, doesn't it, from the cast list of women that he already knows, the others who've been singing to him and, you know, who may be attached to other men and so on.
Is there a specific woman in the play that he's focusing on, or is it all a bit of a sort of an idealised...
Well, it's more on the part of his friends. They think he needs somebody and he needs somebody special. There's nobody for him. No, he's not acting against another character.
Right. So there is no other character?
No, there's no one for him.
Okay.
He's the only one of this group of people that isn't married.
Right. I mean, it can be said, isn't it true that although it sounds quite, I don't know what the word is, conventional or whatever, there is a sort of sharp point to it in a
way.
Well,
there is. He's sardonic about it. And great. Also, I think at the time that this was written, I think sometimes, you know, in the late 60s, 1970-ish, when it was actually on Broadway, you know, the theatre-going audience who, I don't think he's not a, vindictive isn't quite the word, but he wasn't trying to battle with the audience as such, but the audience themselves were described as being, in his words, sort of upper middle class. class New Yorkers, you know, who were quite cynical, shall we say, about these propositions of marriage and all the rest. So you could probably get away with this in that location in a way that...
Yeah,
but there's always... There is a... Yeah, there's a great deal of irony going on here.
Right.
He's sometimes said that Hal Prince is the ironic one. He thinks he's the romantic one. But that's not, I don't think it's as clear cut. It's not as black and white as that. I mean, you hear him, you look at the lyrics, you know, he's also got that tongue in cheek thing about, you know, will it really work? Is it going to work? You know?
Right. All right, you're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM with Sandra Cross, who's extolling the virtues of Stephen Sondheim. We need to do a quick, I suppose, what we might call a commercial break for the Resonance fundraiser. Perhaps you could just read this out.
Okay.
Sandra, thank
you. Right, so Resonance 104.4 FM's annual fundraising week starts from the 9th of February until the 15th. With the funds, we aim to trial a DAB service. Oh, DAB.
That'll do, won't it?
Well, that's why it had the little dashes there, wasn't it? I wasn't sure.
That's all right.
Overhaul our website and increase the range of our FM broadcast beyond central London. Brilliant. Details of the fundraiser, events and listings for our annual auction can be found at fundraiser.resonance.fm.
Thank you very much. Well read. And you have donated, in fact, a vinyl copy of the Ems Bar.
Yeah, first heard on Resonance. Thank you.
Yeah, which was a recording made of buffet car announcements.
That's right, yeah.
A few years ago now. The vinyl is quite rare, and that's signed by yourself and me, in fact.
Yes.
Wavelength has donated an oil painting by the famous Israeli painter Menachem Geffen, spelled G-U-E-F-F-E-N.
Who used to be married to Dinah Rigg, but we're not sure if it was during her Emma Peel days.
It was for 3 years in about 1972 to 75, we think.
After Emma Peel.
Yeah, and I know that Sarah upstairs has her eye on this painting.
Right.
And she's
Can you describe it to get more people interested?
Well, it's an oil on canvas. It measures about 2 feet by 3 feet.
Is it colourful?
Painted in 1960. It's a woman's head with a sort of flowery...
Didn't you say 1970?
No.
Oh, sorry.
Don't think so.
Okay.
1960, and it was exhibited at Gallery 1.
Right.
Which was Victor Musgrave's gallery in Derby Street, London. Okay,
yeah.
That's enough of that for now.
Okay, all right. Well, I know that this next song that you really like, let's just see where they are on the music backers tape.
Another raven not to move, another vodka stinger.
Oh, he's singing The Ladies Who Lunch.
Oh, right.
So we've gone past... Shall we play Another 100 People?
Yeah.
Which is number 7 on your...
Yeah. This is a rapid track, isn't it?
Quite a rapid track,
which puts me in mind of something coming from West Side Story. They both have a similar sort of pace.
Well, it's the dynamic, isn't it? It does have like an engine, really, and it's up to that person who's singing it to rise or fall to it.
Right.
This person is called Pamela Myers. Apparently, she was a student at the time. They had got somebody else earmarked for it, but she just sang it, and that was it.
Another 100 people just got off of the train and came up through the ground line. Another 100 people just got off of the bus and are looking around at another 100 people who got off of the plane and are looking at us who got off of the train and the plane and the bus maybe yesterday. It's a city of strangers. Some come to work, some to play. A city of strangers. Some come to stare, some to stay. And every day, the ones who stay can find each other in the crowded streets and the guarded parks, by the rusty fountains and the dusty trees with the battered box. And they walk together past the postered walls with the crude remarks. And they meet at parties through the friends of friends who they never know. Will you pick me up or do I meet you there? Shall we let it go? Yeah. and another 100 people just got off of the train. It's a city of strangers, some come to work, some to play. A city of strangers, some come to stare, some to stay. And every day, some go away. Or they find each other in the crowded streets and the guarded parks, by the rusty fountains and the dusty trees with the battered barks. And they walk together past the postern walls with a crude remark. And they meet at parties through the friends of brands who they never know. Will you pick me up or do I meet you there? Shall we let it go? Did you get my message? Because I looked in vain. And another 100 people just got off of the train. And another 100 people just got off of the train. And another 100 people just got off of the train. Another 100 people just got off of the train.
Who's singing that?
This is Pamela Myers, who I said was... She was just a music student at the time that she was auditioned for this part, and they just heard her singing this. That's it.
Yeah.
I think, as I said, somebody else had been earmarked for it, but when they heard her doing it, it was it.
Right.
In the Penny Baker film, when you see her singing, it's just she's just so eager, but so natural with the material. And, the film is great.
And we're going to have to... We'll have to make time for being alive, of course.
Yeah, we have got to. So I think we're just going to have to cut it down to the ladies who lunch and being alive. I think that's just about the most that we can do now.
All right. So should we get straight on with the ladies who lunch?
Let's see where the
lunch?
Music backers are now.
Well, they're still pitching, but...
And the more she protests, the more people congregate, the more they come together, and the louder and more joyfully they sing. And if the song ends, there's a little monologue in the middle of Howard Wood, and in fact, the song ends with a tune of Far Ahead.
Okay, so Ladies Who Lunch is number
13.
I'd like to propose a toast. Here's to the ladies who lunch. Everybody laugh. Lounging in their caftans and planning a brunch on their own behalf. Off to the gym. Then to a fitting, claiming their fat, and looking grim, 'cause they've been sitting, choosing a hat. Does anyone still wear a hat? I'll drink to that. Here's to the girls who stay smart. Aren't they a gas? Rushing to their classes in optical art, wishing it would pass. Another long, exhausting day. Another $1,000. A matinee, a pinter play. Perhaps a piece of Mahler's. I'll drink to that. And one for Mahler. Here's to the girls who play wife. Aren't they too much? Keeping house but clutching a copy of life.
just to keep in touch. The ones who follow the rules and meet themselves at the schools, too busy to know that they're fools. Aren't they a gem? I'll drink to them. Let's all drink to them. And here's to the girls who just watch. Aren't they the best? When they get depressed, it's a bottle of scotch plus a little jest. Another chance to disapprove, another brilliant singer, another reason not to move, another vodka stinger. So here's to the girls on the go, everybody tries. Look into their eyes and you'll see what they know. Everybody dies. A toast to that invincible bunch, the dinosaur surviving the crunch. Let's hear it for the ladies who lunch. Everybody rise.
So that was Elaine Stritch.
Yeah, apparently she plays the character of Joanne, and it was not only written, I'm reading from the Finishing the Hat, Stephen Sondheim's book, was not only written for Elaine Stritch, it was based on her, or at least on her acerbic delivery of self-assessment, as exemplified by a moment George Firth, the writer of Company, had shared with her. They'd entered a bar at 2 a.m, and Elaine, well-oiled, had murmured to the bartender in passing, "Just give me a bottle of vodka and a floor plan."
It's quite a facetious.
It is, but it's also song. Just when you see the lyrics written down, you see that it is actually, you know, it's a sort of, you know, come on, Stepford Wives, wake up. You know, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, you're not doing anything. All you're doing is spending money, wasting your time. Where is your life?
Yeah.
But I suppose she's casting herself in that role too, you know, which is why she sounds so incredibly, desperately disappointed.
Okay. Well, we do want to make room probably my favourite song from the whole production.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it all gathers together in this song because Bobby is beginning to get the idea that actually he would like to be with somebody.
Right.
And this is, the lyrics of the song will tell you precisely how he's feeling.
Yeah.
And it's a celebration of life and it's affirmative and it's all that music theatre can be.
Bobby,
Bobby,
Bobby, Bobby,
Robbie,
Robert, darling,
Bobby,
we've been trying
Bobby,
to call
Bobby,
you.
Baby,
Bobby, Bobby,
Angel, I've got
Robble,
Bobby, love,
Bobby, honey,
Bobby,
we've been
Angel,
trying to reach
Bobby,
you
baby,
all day.
Bobby, if we're asking
Bobby,
Bobby,
there was something we wanted to say.
What have you been up to, kiddo?
Stop.
Bobby.
His idea of what he's looking for. Someone waiting, cool and sterile, giving and loving as a
touching as angels. Joanne, would I know her even if I met her? Have I missed her? Did I let her?
Bubby.
Robbie, Robert, darling,
Bobby,
we've been trying
Bobby.
To call
Bobby,
you.
Baby,
Bobby, Bubby,
Angel, I've got
Robble.
Something to
Bobby,
love,
Bobby, honey,
Bobby, we've
Angel,
been trying to reach
Bobby,
you
all day,
Bobby,
if we're asking Bobby,
Bobby,
there was something
we wanted to say,
what have
we been up to, kiddo,
stop.
Bobby?
What do you get? Someone to hold you too close. Someone to hurt you too deep. Someone to sit in your chair to ruin your sleep.
That's true, but there's more than that.
Is that all you think there is to it?
You've got so many reasons for not being with someone, but Robert, you haven't one good reason for being alone.
Come on, you're onto something, Bobby. You're onto something.
Someone to need you too much. Someone to know you too well. Someone to pull you up short, to put you through hell.
You see what you look for, you know.
You're not a kid anymore, Robbie. I don't think you'll ever be a kid again, kiddo.
Hey, buddy, don't be afraid that it won't be perfect. The only thing to be afraid of, really, is that it won't be.
Don't stop now. Keep going.
Someone you have to let in. Someone whose feelings you spare. Someone who, like it or not, will want you to share a little, a lot.
And what does all that mean?
Robert, how do you know so much about it when you've never been there?
It's much better living it than looking at it, Robert.
Add 'em up, Bobby, add 'em up.
Someone to crown you with love. Someone to force you to care. Someone to make you come through. Will always be there, as frightened as you of being alive. Being alive. Being alive. Being alive.
Blow out the candles, Robert, and make a wish. Want something. Want something.
Somebody hold me too close. Somebody hurt me too deep. Somebody sit in my chair and ruin my sleep and make me aware of being alive. Being alive. Somebody need me too much. Somebody know me too well. Somebody pull me up short and put me through hell and give me support for being alive. Make me alive. Make me alive. Make me confused. Lock me with prayer. My days, but alone is alone, not alive. Somebody crowd me with love. Somebody force me to care. Somebody make me come through. I'll always be there, as frightened as you, to help us survive.